Hello, this is Ivana Goldstein Sachs of Web Yeshiva with this week's Rashi podcast for Parashat Tetzaveh. Visit www.webyeshiva.org for more information on our fully interactive online yeshiva. Rashi is often thought of, correctly so, as a midrash-oriented commentator. And although, as we've discussed many times, he chooses and often gives his own spin to the Midrashim in order to make them fit the pshat of the Pesukim. Right? Nevertheless, he always, when he can, chooses a Midrash rather than giving his own original idea. In this week's parasha, in Parashat Tetzaveh, however, we find a striking example of Rashi as exegete, right? In the absence of Midrash, right? What Rashi does when there is no Midrash on which to base his commentary. Throughout his commentary on the kelim and the garments of the kohanim, right, the vessels of the mishkan and the garments that the kohanim would wear, Rashi attempts to clarify what they were and to bring them to life for us using the relevant midrashic sources. But suddenly, in his commentary on the ephod, right, the outermost garment of the kohen gadol, Rashi is left to his own devices. He's on his own. Perek Kavchet Pasuk Dalet, Dibor HaMatchil Ve'efod, Rashi says, Lo shamati ve'lo matzati bebraita perush tavnito. I have not heard, nor have I found in the Braita, any explanation of its form. Right? Rashi says that there is no source that explains what the ephod looks like. Ve'libi omer li shehu chagor lo me'achorav. Rachvo kerochav gav ish, kemin senar shekorin Porcion de Laz. Right, he says, my heart tells me that this was something that was tied behind him, right, that the ephod was something which was tied behind the Kohen, its width being the same width as the back of a man, like a sort of an apron called a porcion in Old French. Right, Rashi often brings what in Hebrew is called Laz, right, when he, you know, Lashon Amzar, right, he brings in Old French, which of course is the language of the place where he lived, in order to explain what certain things are. So he says that the ephod was tied behind like a sort of an apron, which is called a portion, you know, pardon my not so good French pronunciation, in Old French. And what is this garment that he's referring to from the French attire of his day? He explains that this garment was something shechogrot hasarot harachvot al hasusim. This is that garment, Rashi is saying, which, you know, those of you who live with me in France are familiar with, which the women of the nobility would tie on when riding horses. Kach ma'aseu milimata. It is thus, Rashi says, made for the lower part of the body. Right, so Rashi goes on in a moment, but let's stop here for a moment. What is Rashi doing here, right? In the absence of a midrashic source to rely on, he relies on his heart, right? Libi, omerle, right? Meaning his intuition, right? That which his gut feeling, right? He relies on this to guide him in his commentary. And Rashi concludes that the ephod was a sort of an apron which covered the lower part of the body. But then, as we will see, he then proceeds to present his case, right, which actually is based not only on gut feeling, together with an inspiration from contemporary French attire, but on a careful analysis of biblical text. Now, let's take a moment to clarify what it is actually that Rashi needs to clarify here, what Rashi needs to prove, so to speak, about his claim. Now, the psukim themselves tell us that the ephod had shoulder pieces. It says a few psukim later in Pasuk Zayin, Shtech tefot, chovroti hiyelo. And from the next pasuk, from Pasuk Chet, we know that the choshen also had some sort of band, a cheshev, which was used to tie the ephod on. But it is Rashi's claim that the ephod was essentially like an apron, meaning that from the waist down, it was like some sort of garment which is wrapped around the legs, right? This is what Rashi has to establish. He has to prove that this claim is true. Because there's nothing in the psukim which really indicate to us what the rest of the ephod looked like. It is that part of the garment, right, the apron-like part of the garment, right, that which he said, which is like the garment which the women of the nobility would wear when they were riding horses, right, he likens it to that, like he brings that as an example of what it might have looked like, but this is what he has to prove. Incidentally, if you're interested in seeing what this garment is that Rashi is referring to, you can look at paintings of women riding horses from the Middle Ages. A good example of something like this, for those who are interested, if you look at portraits of Joan of Arc, right, who, like Rashi, lived in medieval France, although she did live about 400 years later, but nevertheless, many of the pictures of the paintings of her show her wearing a garment which actually looks very similar to how Rashi describes the ephod. Right, so all you have to do is Google Joan of Arc and press on images, right, to see pictures, and you can see what he's talking about. Also, if you want to look at pictures that are more directly related to our Rashi, look up the pictures online of the Bigdei Kehuna. Right, for example, you can look on the website of Machon HaMikdash, www.templeinstitute.org, where they have pictures of all the various of the Bigdei Kehuna. Now, interestingly, although according it seems that that the Machon HaMikdash, when they made the Bigdei Kehuna, which they claim can one day be used actually in the Beit HaMikdash, they seem to be following the opinion of the Rambam, who understands what the ephod looks like as different from how Rashi explains in the Rashi that we're learning today. You can see a picture of how they made the ephod, which is not as Rashi describes, but rather as the Rambam describes. But if you look at some of the other pictures of Kohanim, of the Kohen Gadol specifically, which they have, because they in the museum and on the website, they have many different pictures depicting things that went on in the Beit HaMikdash. In many of the pictures, the pictures actually follow Rashi's interpretation, right? The description of how Rashi understands the ephod. So, for those of you who are interested in some visual aid, you can look at these two different types of pictures online. Now, as I mentioned earlier, Rashi does not rely solely on his gut feeling, right, that this is what the ephod looked like, that it was some sort of apron wrapped around the lower part of the body. But as I mentioned, he bases his interpretation on a very careful analysis of the psukim. So the first thing that Rashi does, in the continuation of the Perush, which we'll look at in a moment, is he first proves that the ephod was not comprised solely of the cheshev, right, the band, and the chtef, right, the shoulder pieces, right? One might think that that's all there was to the ephod, right? But Rashi first sets out to prove that those were parts of the ephod, or they were attached to the ephod, but they were not the ephod itself. Right, so after he has just explained, in the part of the Rashi that we already read, he explained that he believes that it's a garment which is tied from behind, and that it has a some sort of apron-like garment which covers the bottom part of the body. Sheneemar v'David chagor ephod bat. And he brings a quote from Shmuel Bet, Perek Vav, Pasuk Yud Daled, where it describes David as wearing an ephod bat. And it specifically says v'David chagor ephod bat. Chagor means that it was tied, like a chagura, like a belt. Lamdeinu sheha'ifod chagurahi. Right, so from this we learn, Rashi tells us, that we learned that the ephod was tied on like a chagura. The same verb is used, incidentally, in a pasuk in Vayikra Perek Chet, pasuk Zayin, describing the ephod, where the same verb vayachor is used. Vayiten alav et ha'ephod, vayachgor oto b'cheshev ha'ephod. It's the same verb, vayachkor, which means to belt on, to tie on, is used in the connection to the ephod. So, Rashi says, from this we know, that the ephod is a kind of a belt. But, as we already started to read, אי-אפשר לומר שאין בו אלא חגורה לבדה, but we can't say that the ephod is only some sort of belt, שהרי נאמר, right? And how do we know that? Because it says in Vayikra Perakhet Pasuk Zayin, the Pasuk which I just quoted, Vayiten alav et ha'ephod, it says, and they placed upon him, upon the Kohen Gadol, the ephod, v'achar kach v'yachgor oto b'cheshev ha'ephod. Right, the ephod is put upon him, and then it says that the ephod is tied on with the band, with the cheshev. And the Rashi points out that Unklus says, he translates, as would seem natural, you know, the belt of the ephod, Lamdenu shehacheshev hu hachagor, v'ha'ephod shem hatachshit levado. Meaning that the cheshev is the belt, that which ties it on, but the ephod is the ornament itself. Meaning that you have the cheshev of the ephod, right? But the cheshev and the ephod are not one and the same. And then Rashi goes on, V'i efshar lomar she'al shem shte ha'chtefot shebo hu karoy ephod, right? We already know that there is also involved in this garment two shoulder pieces called chtefot, right? So then Rashi is saying, you can't say that the ephod itself are the chtefot. Shehare ne'emar shte chtefot ha'ephod, right? The same argument as we saw regarding the cheshev. It doesn't say, it says that the two chtefot of the ephod, implying that there is more to the ephod than the chtefot alone. Lamdeinu, right, Rashi says, she'ha'ephod, shem levad v'achtefot shem levad, meaning that each thing is a separate entity. The ephod is one thing and the chtefot are another thing, right? The chtefot are the chtefot of the ephod, but they are not the ephod itself. What remains for Rashi to establish is what exactly the ephod was. And Rashi continues, "Lekach ani omer she'al shem ha'senar shalmata karoy ephod." He says that therefore it's on account of the apron, which he claims is on the lower part of the body, right, that it is called the ephod. Right? Why is it called the ephod? Right? Why is it called an ephod? Al shem she'ofdo u'mikashto bo. Because the Kohen Gadol is. Encircled or enclosed the Kohen Gadol. It encircles him and it ornaments him. And Rashi brings as proof the Pasuk from Vayikra Perek Chet Pasuk Zayin, where the root Aleph Pei Dalid appears not only as a noun, not only as the word ephod, which we've been discussing, but also as a verb. Vayachgor oto b'cheshev ha'ephod, that he ties him in the band of the ephod. Vayepod lobo. And you'll pardon for a moment my translation, and he ephods him within it. Now, of course, the verb ayin pei dalid is difficult in and of itself, because you know, it seems that their understanding, or Rashi's understanding as well as other commentaries, are understanding the meaning of that verb based on the context in which it's found, where it seems to be saying that it's being the ephod is being wrapped around the Kohen. Whether there's an independent etymology of that verb with that meaning, right, to gird or to encircle, to surround, I'm not entirely sure. I have not been able to find such an etymology. But there is one thing in which this etymology, even with understanding it from the context itself, seems to be correct. And that is, if you go back to the Pasuk from Vayikra, Perakhet Pasuk Zayin, right, the word yachgor, to tie, seems to be parallel in the Pasuk to the verb vayepod, right? It says vayachgor oto b'cheshev. It, the ephod, will be tied with the band, with the band of the ephod. Vayepod lo bo, right? And the kohen will be epoded, will be wrapped in the ephod, put in the ephod with it, right? So vayepod and vayachgor seem to be parallel to each other. And since we know that vayachgor means to belt on, to gird, to tie, to encircle, so it would seem that that's what the verb bayepod means as well. So, therefore, Rashi's claim that the ephod is something which would have to somehow encircle the body, and yet is not the belt itself, as he previously established, seems to have basis. And then Rashi continues, Va'od omer li libi, my heart also tells me, he's going back to his intuition here, Sheyesh ra'aya shehu min levush. Right, that there is a proof, and he's going to bring another pasuk in a moment, that the ephod is some sort of garment. Right, it's not merely a belt or a shoulder piece. Rather, it is a real garment that is worn, right, wrapped around an individual. And what is the proof? Shetirgem Yonatan v'David chagor ephod bad kardut debuts. Right, in the translation of Targum Yonatan to that pasuk that we saw already about David wearing an ephod bad, he translates ephod bad kardut debuts. Right, kardut, right, being the word he uses to translate ephod, right, boots being bad. And then Rashi goes on, v'tirgem kemo mi'ilim kardutin v'ma'aseh tamar achot avshalom ki chen telbashna benot ha-melech ha-betulot mi'ilim. Right? He says, and Targum Onkelos uses the same translation for the word mi'ilim in the story of Amnon and Tamar, where it says that the daughters of the king would wear mi'ilim. Right, and there, mi'ilim is translated as kardutin, right? The same word as used in the Targum to translate ephod. Now, mi'il, we know what it is, right? And a mi'il is some sort of coat or a tunic, right? That's a familiar word. And the fact that unklus uses the same word to translate ephod would indicate, according to Rashi, that the ephod was also some sort of garment that was worn, right? Again, not simply a belt or shoulder pieces. So what we have witnessed here is an impressive bit of exegesis, right? We're so used to seeing Rashi as quoting other sources, older sources, right? Sources from the Midrash, and clearly we have noted the ingenious nature of many of Rashi's comments and how he uses the Midrash to explain things in the Pasuk in a way that is often different than how the Midrash itself is presenting itself or explaining the pasuk. But here we see Rashi in a different mode. We see Rashi here as a commentator who looks at the pasuk and looks at the other evidence and on his own puts together a very convincing explanation of what the ephod is, and thereby provides us with a picture of a garment which otherwise we would be very hard-pressed to visualize. So it's nice in a way, and it's interesting to see Rashi in this different mode, right? Which comes about, as Rashi has himself said, because the Braita is lacking here, right? The Midrashic sources do not provide that which Rashi is trying to give us. Shabbat Shalom u'mivorach.